Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Minority Friday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Democrats about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Thank you very much, and good morning. Senator Sheree Buckner-Webb is the Assistant Minority Leader and is here for Minority Friday. She is in her eighth year. Eight years, District 19.
Good morning.
Man.
Yeah.
Veteran legislator.
Oh, those veteran words and old folks words just don't feel good, Paul J.
I know it. Tell me about it. I know not much has happened so far. We've only been in a little more than a week. Do you have a feel for the legislature yet?
I wish I had a feel. There's a lot of things going on. It's really busy. But, you know, at the start, we're doing rules and doing standard stuff, trying to get our personal bills out by today, which is Friday in the Senate. The CEC committee kind of had a, I think they get a personal best for 5 hours of meeting this week. 5 hours, but they did come up with a couple of recommendations, but it was 5 hours.
Yeah. Why stayed up past their bedtime.
Yeah, why did it take so long?
Thorough. Does that sound good answer? Thorough.
I think so, sure.
Very thorough. Wanted to make sure they went through every caveat. You know, it's really important. Employee compensation is a big deal, and we know that we're at the low end of the spectrum for wages. So to find a solution that could help our folks that work for us in the government get a fair shake is an important thing. Came up with a 3% merit increase that was recommended by the governor. Still pretty low.
Yep.
Still of concern.
No magic wand.
No magic wand. No great fix. But kudos for them. They hung in there.
Well, yeah, they did.
Let me get this out of the way. You guys had some, I guess it was called civility training, or just some training on how to act to other people, which is kind of in the news. How did that go, and what was it like?
Well, you know, I think we called it harassment training, but we're really not teaching you to harass, but trying to give you the caveats
point.
To define what harassment is and realize that it's not just sexual harassment, which we see all over the media right now. But we didn't tout it as civility training, but it's important training for the people in our body, whether they be civilians, lobbyists, staff, or legislators, that we do need to treat each other a certain way. And we defined a lot of things. We've put together a committee. I'm one of the chairs, and my co-chair is Representative Nielsen Troy in the House. We've gathered a group of people. We're just about finishing that piece so we can get to work. I mean, we finished the piece of selecting the committee. We'll get to work next week and come up with some policies about harassment. And harassment shows up in lots of different areas. It's not just sexual. It can be age. It can be ethnicity. It can be all those things that we can take for granted and treat people inappropriately.
Has there been a certain amount of that in the Idaho legislature in the recent past?
Well, I don't know that I would say that, but I think that we are really responsive to what's going on in the nation. And I think if we're a microcosm of society, even in Boise, Idaho, we know that harassment has an opportunity to rear its ugly head, and we're going to interrupt that continued aggression that seems to show up everywhere.
Any pieces of legislation that have your interest right now early in the session?
There are so many. One that I'm bringing with Senator Marianne Jordan is a minimum wage bill. We're looking at in 2019 raising the minimum wage to $8.75, 2020 going to $10.50, and 2021 $12, and then index it to the consumer price index. We realize that Idaho is at the bottom of the crew for low wages. We need to do something about that right away.
Are you optimistic about that bill?
I'm always optimistic.
Okay.
And prayerful and working very hard to get it done.
Let me change that. Do you think it'll be passed?
I would hope it would be passed.
Kind of the answer, yeah.
The minority party, having been in earlier this week, seemed to say or feel at this point in time that, sure, we're 50th, but Utah's 51st. That somehow makes it okay. And then they say, but one of the things the Democrats don't say is how well we use the money we have, and the fact that even though we don't have a lot of money, we put it to good use.
Well, I would say we do a very good job because we have no other choice, but we would like to up the bottom. That's no reason to keep us at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, we think about our economic growth. I mean, think about Idaho. We're growing by leaps and bounds. We're trying to bring the best and the brightest, and we need infrastructure and financing and wages that will keep them here. We don't want to be the training ground for somebody to go to another state and do wonderful things. We want to keep them here. We want to grow our economy. We want to grow everything, our educational system. We need better wages.
The governor gave his State of the State address, and he proposed approaching $200 million in tax cuts. Is that something the state can afford?
I got to tell you, it causes me great concern. I'm afraid it's going to be very detrimental to Idaho families, and I'm afraid that families with children are going to bear the brunt. I'm very concerned about that.
What would be the first thing to be affected?
I don't know what the first thing to be affected, because there's so many interlocking parts, but I'm going to say the overall outcome. We've got to be able to fund the growth of our state, and we're not doing that.
We're talking with Senator Sheree Buckner Webb, KBOI Newstime, 8:45. Joan Joy.
You're listening to Minority Friday on 670 KBOI.
KBOI Newstime is 8:50. It's Minority Friday when we talk to Democrats, or a Democrat at least, from the Idaho legislature. We have Sheree Buckner Webb in today. A group of Idaho Democrats wrote to our congressional delegation and asked them to repudiate, I guess, the words that the president used about immigration last week. Did you think they would do it, or was this just to get the opinion out?
I think they would do what?
Do you think they would repudiate it?
I was hoping they would. I will tell you that it was our leader, Senator Michelle Stinnett, myself, and Marianne Jordan that wrote the letter. We drafted the letter. And I'm sure we represented the thoughts of almost everyone in our caucus that we've talked, not only our caucus, but the Republican caucus, Democratic caucus. But I would say to you that we would hope they would. I mean, we've seen that some people have taken the risk to do it. We know that it's hard times in Washington, D.C., but that kind of language just cannot be, or even that kind of attitude, is only detrimental to us as a whole, as a country, as a state. And I would hope they would have said something to him, but they would have voiced their disdain or their disappointment, at least.
If they have, they've done it quietly.
If they have, they've done it quietly.
Changing the focus to the national scene, they're going to shut the government down?
Gosh, I don't know.
And if they do, does it matter?
I was listening to the historical significance of how many times they've done it, under what leader, and that ultimately it cost them a lot to do that. It's a shambles. Let's tell the truth. It's a shambles. I don't know if they will or not. No crystal ball.
You've got a ban the box proposal.
I do. Ban the box is a piece of legislation that's been enacted by about 29 states. And what it does is reduces the barriers to employment for individuals with criminal records. 20 states have passed it. And what it basically does is says that when you come in to apply for a job, I can't ask you about your criminal background until and if I offer you a job. So it doesn't color my impression of you. I don't make automatic assumptions about whether I will or will not offer you an opportunity to be employed. And then if I do offer you employment and you do have a criminal background, you have an opportunity with all kinds of stopgaps to consider the nature and gravity of the offense, the time that's passed, how you've carried yourself in the time that you've been out of prison or jail. And it should only be considered when after a conditional offer is made. I think it's a great opportunity. You know, we have, especially young people that have had one little bit of drug charge or something like that and got busted and put in, and we know that there's a greater incidence for certain people in our population to go to jail as opposed to those with the wherewithal to stay out of jail. And let's give them a fair shot at being a productive member of society, to help avoid recidivism, to get them working and contributing to our economy. I love it.
It can still be a consideration for an employer, but it isn't something that just weeds people out to begin with.
Yes, yes. They get a shot at being employed. We found that many employers have found they have great employees if they weren't prejudiced as they walked in the door because they had a criminal background.
What's been the biggest change in the 8 years you've been in the legislature?
Wow. I think the biggest change that I really noticed while I've been in the Senate is because Bart Davis was a stable. He was there the whole time, and he was a masterful leader. And so this new leadership is going to be a new opportunity for us. Mm-hmm. He was a great inspiration and great at training me up, if you will, and giving me guidance and calling me on the carpet when I needed it. And so this new new leadership with Senator Winder, Senator Vict, and Senator Anthon, that's a new thing, and it also creates an opportunity for us in the body as a whole to rethink the way we did things, to stretch us, we'll be better and better. I mean, we were great before, but now we're going to be better, and we have to determine how we'll operate a little bit differently.
It's kind of a moving on up year.
Yeah, right? It is. You know, I mean, I was really proud of what we did in the past, but I think it'll stretch each and every one of us because we had that stopgap. We could lean on him in a great deal, mm-hmm. and it's amazing.
One of the things the governor mentioned in the State of the State address was that he believes the unemployment insurance tax rate should be cut, and he mentioned it last year, and it wasn't done. Do you think it'll be done this year?
I love it when you ask me, what do you think? Today I think something, tomorrow I think something different. I really have no idea. I mean, I think I talk about the growth in our place, and we're talking about tax changes and who's going to be the one that's going to have to bear the brunt of it and who will be helped and who will be hurt. We have to look at it holistically and not from a political standpoint, but what's best for the folks of the state of Idaho. That sounds pretty trite, but it's absolutely the important thing to do. I mean, look what the major economic condition of people are in the state of Idaho, and then we have to make decisions based on that. We've got to look. We can't look at the great state of Idaho. We've got to look at rural communities. We have to think of the impact of what we do on the state as a whole. I'm preaching now, don't I? Hallelujah.
Okay. You know, it's okay. When you look around the Senate, do you see what you consider to be a group of people who are willing to do that sort of thing?
I am really proud of the Senate. I think that we are collaborative. I think we're not in agreement. Oftentimes we're not in agreement. I'm going to say this is the second year, so we have some understanding of who we are and how we work. And I think you'll see a lot of legislation that's brought that is supported by both sides.
What's your biggest goal for the session, personally?
My biggest goal for the session? To make decisions that will adequately consider the folks of Idaho. I mean, to really not to let all that partisan stuff get in the way, but to look at what's best for Idaho. I know that sounds trite. I say it again. But that's what we're charged to do, to look at Idaho as a whole, not just the districts that we represent, not just our neighborhoods, but to look at bringing Idaho where we need to be for the future.
Sheree Buckner-Webb, thank you very much for joining us.
District 19, Senator Sheree Buckner-Webb. It's 8:56, Idaho Talks Live and Open Phones Friday. After a news break at the top of the hour.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Open Phones Friday. Give us a call. 336-3700. That's 208-336-3700. 1-800-529-5264. #670 on Verizon Wireless. So give us a call, and let's get the ball rolling here.
We want to say thank you again, by the way, to Senator Sheree Buckner-Webb, who came in for Minority Friday. We do this throughout the legislative session for those of you who are new. On Thursdays, we have Majority Thursday, and we talk to Republicans from the Idaho legislature, and then on Friday we talk to probably one Democrat usually. Mm-hmm. Republicans usually show up
are more of them.
In twos, because they do have more Republicans, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the phones and Open Phones Friday. Mark, you're on.
Gentlemen, what I want to talk about is carried interest.
Okay,
but before I go or start, about 20 minutes ago, and this is not a joke, I was watching CNBC. I call it the stock market channel.
Okay.
They announced that James Comey is taking a job at William & Mary teaching ethics.
Seriously?
Seriously. That's no joke. That's what they said. Comey's got a job teaching ethics at William & Mary College.
And your opinion is those who can't teach?
I don't know what is that old saying.
Those who can't teach.
Well, he doesn't have any, so I don't know
don't
how he can teach it. So anyway, let's get on to carried interest here. And I said, well, everybody's eyes will glaze over, but I'll try to do this as simply as possible. Carried interest basically is what about 3,000 to 4,000 hedge funds or equity funds get to use to save on taxes. And what it is, they call it 5 and 20. When you have a hedge fund or whatever, if you're the boss of one, you get 5% of whatever's brought in. Say your hedge fund's $1 billion, you get 5% of that right off the top. So that's $50 million, and then you get 20% of the profits. So say you're running the hedge fund and you had a good year, the hedge fund doubled or whatever it is to $2 billion. You'd get your five billion off the top, and then you'd get 20% of the billion, which I believe is $80 million. Now, how that's taxed, even though it's a fee, and anybody that gets fees is taxed, like a doctor, mm-hmm. if they're in the high income bracket at it's whatever, 39%, let's say 40%. So normally you'd be taxed, your 20% would be $200 million, so you'd be taxed $80 million at the 40%. But because the government, the Treasury Secretary, back either when Robert Rubin under Clinton or Geithner under Obama, I don't know, somewhere in there, they interpreted the rule that this could be capital gains. We'll call it capital gains instead of a fee. So it's only taxed at 15%.
Well, to be fair, they only get it if there are capital gains, but yes, it is in fact a fee, but it's based on a percentage of capital gains. So, yeah, I'm with you on this one.
Yeah, it's only taxed at 15%, and for anybody else that gets that kind of money, it's taxed at the 40%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Trump anyway said he was going to get rid of it, but guess what? It stayed there. And the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, scored it as saving, the savings for the hedge fund industry, the 3,000 to 4,000 people that are involved in it or whatever, would be $10 billion a year, or they said $100 billion over 10 years. And like one of the congressmen said, well, this doesn't affect very many people. Well, it don't, but $100 billion over 10 years is a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the butterfly wings thing. That affects a lot of people.
Yeah, jeez. Anyway, everybody, it was never pulled or whatnot, and I called Mike Crapo's office in December to ask how he was going to vote on it, ask him to send me a letter. Never got a letter. January 2nd, I did the same thing. How do you justify this? Never got nothing. But one of the things was, as soon as the ink was dry on signing that before the ink was dry on signing that tax bill, a guy by the name of Steve Schwartzman, he runs Blackstone, which is a huge hedge fund, he sent a $4 million check to Mitch McConnell for the Senate campaign thing.
Which, as we know now, is free speech.
Oh, yeah, but he sent that, and you can bet your sweet butt that he sent $4 million to Chuck Schumer, too. There is no reason for this for this, you know, they could take that. They could. Oh, and I heard as high as it might be $180 million over 10 years. Now they can take that money. They could reduce the deficit. I mean, they're sometimes fighting over nickels and dimes, or they could actually put it to good use. But my idea on this is to get everybody aboard. We got 50 states. You take that $10 billion divided by 50, every June 1st for 10 years, you send every state a check for $200 million. Now, California would say that was chump change, but Hawaii maybe could buy some missile guards or to put over the buttons with theirs. But I was thinking Idaho on $200 million, what they could do with it, the state could keep 100, and then every June 2nd, for the other $100 million, we got 44 counties. They could send a check for approximately $2.3 million to every county. And this money would be used for grants, not for expanding programs. It might be used for programs as a little extra kicker, but for grants, so you're not expanding government on it for 10 years. Or, you know, in the state, you could use it for infrastructure. You could use it for any. I mean, I'm sure there'd be a hell of a big fight over the
grants, not loans. Then,
not loans, grants. Okay. It's given outright. The county's $2.3 million. Maybe you might want to grant your economic development thing a grant of whatever $50,000. You might want to give Terry Riley here a quarter of a million. You know, that type of thing. And okay. The state with their $100 million could use it for infrastructure, or also they could take $10 million of it and buy Bitcoin. Because some people say after that, or after 10 years on that, you know, because Bitcoin, $10 million would buy 1,000 Bitcoin. But some people are saying that it's going to be worth $40 million in 10 years.
Yeah, maybe.
And if they lost
maybe
it.
Maybe is right.
If they lost it, no big deal. This is basically free money, but you'd have an awful lot of, you know, the two senators of every state, I think, that should be for that. If not, they're nuts.
We need to get to a break. Appreciate the call, and you do have some interesting ideas. It shows you've been thinking.
Thanks, Mark. 9:15.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
Open phones Friday. We'll talk about whatever's on your mind today. 208-336-3700. 1-800-529-KBOI. That's 1-800-529-5264. Let's go to the phones now, and Mike Boise. Mike.
Morning, fellas. Hey, in regards to the shutdown.
Yes.
You know, everyone loses in a shutdown, but some lose more than others.
Who's that?
Well, in this case, it's clearly, to me anyhow, that the Republicans with control of the House, Senate, and White House, and Congress with only a 14% approval rating, they don't really have much to lose in Congress. So what do? They take out a gun and shoot themselves in the head. And what does the president do? He keeps Congress and his staff confused by tweeting, of all things, that DACA should not be included in the bill that passed in the House yesterday. And in the meantime, and this is a little off subject, the Wall Street Journal, that not exactly left-wing rag, reports that the president had sex with a porn star 3 months after his son Barron was born. So I add that all up and say, shut it down. Maybe it'll wake up in better shape than it before it was shut down.
So it's like a computer. You turn it off and then turn it back on.
Yeah, it's reboot the damn thing.
Okay. Could work. I don't know why computers work that way, but they do.
Something good might come out of it. But there was a big flurry of shutdowns from the 81s through 87. They were all 1 or 2 days. And the last big one, was in 2013, when 16 days, Obama. And then there was another one in 95, Clinton, 21 days. But see, the difference is that was a Republican Congress versus a Democratic president. Now all three of the branches,
so Republicans,
the legislature are Republican, and the president's Republican. So I don't think they can wiggle out of it. And the other factor they're trying to throw in here, well, this means the Democrats don't want kids to have CHIP. Well, this isn't the end of the CHIP process. If it doesn't pass as part of a large funding bill, it's going to come back because 80% of the public wants it back, and because before this, 80% of Congress wanted it back. So they're throwing up this false argument that Democrats hate children.
Democrats don't want a border wall, essentially.
Well, they want to fund some research, but they don't want to throw up the big wall that our beloved leader has bounced back and forth.
The analogy that we had yesterday was this would be like somebody saying, would you like some lunch? Yes, I would. Well, I'll give you a cheeseburger, but you have to let me hit you in the knees with a bat. And you say, well, then no, thank you. And I go, well, I guess you don't want lunch then, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think Pelosi summed it up well with her rather crude comparison yesterday. Put a cherry on top. And do but don't breathe. All right, that's all I got.
Well, thank you very much.
That's amazing.
Well, and apparently he thinks that, and to a certain extent, I mean, he's got a point, because there is a Republican majority in the House and in the Senate, and the president is a Republican, that if this happens, there are some people out there, voters, I suppose, probably not Trump's base, but there are some people out there who would look at this and say, well, why can't the Republicans just do this?
True. So the Democrats are standing pat.
Apparently.
On DACA. Now they're saying that it's going to happen. Congress hurtled forward toward a government shutout today. Democrats in the Senate offered no sign of supporting a short-term bill to keep the government open unless it includes protection for illegal immigrants brought to the country as children. Not going to happen.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people on both sides that don't want to just have a CR, a continuing resolution, where, okay, let's fund the government for another month, and then next month we'll do this again.
Because we've been there before.
Well, yeah. And they're not in favor of that.
No. With a midnight deadline looming, the bill moves to the Senate, where Republicans hold only a slender majority, making prospects grim for a passage.
Yeah.
To break a Democratic filibuster, the bill will need 60 votes. Republicans have a 51-49.
Right. Well, and that's the reality. That's the reality of it right there, is that while there is a majority in the Senate, it's a small majority, and this is one of those votes that you have to win 60-40.
What do you think? Well, we'll talk about that when we come back. KBOI News Time, 9:26.
This is Idaho Talks Live, today at 3. Listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
All right, so we are back on an Open Phones Friday. Let's go to Cliff of Caldwell. Cliff.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'd like to comment about the judge's decision on Cleveland Bundy and also a different judge on the Dwight Hammond case.
Okay.
They're both miles apart in their view of the situation. And both are women judges, not to be sexist in my talking, but
right.
Just pointing out that fact. They set Bundy free, and I'm not in favor of one way or the other on that. I think he has the right to say what he needs to say, but he may have chosen a poor way to do it. And with the Dwight Hammond case, Dwight and Steve Hammond, Steve spent a year in prison already, and then the judge decided that he was a terrorist instead of an arsonist, and that terrorist term is one that upsets me.
You would probably prefer just some consistency in the courts, then?
Yes.
Okay.
And also the fact that taking into consideration Steve Hammond was a young father and husband with a family, and then missing the best years of the life as the family, kids playing ball in school, and things like that, it's just unfortunate that people in judicial positions, but they're biased, which is pretty apparent to me.
Okay.
In these cases.
Yeah, ideally a judge simply follows the rule of the law and explains what the rule of the law is. But in this case, it seems like two different explanations were used.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call.
Thanks, Cliff.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, let's go to, we've got three Johns on the line. Let's go to John and Cuna.
Yeah, that's me. I was wanting to talk about what's going on in hospitals and nursing homes in our area.
Okay.
And what's been happening to my wife. In September, she got in the hospital with a problem with her gallbladder. And in a few days, they had that worked out, and they sent her to a rehab center and nursing home, where she stayed for 42 days. And during the time she was there, she contracted something called C. diff. They used to kill it in the cattle industry, the scours. And a urinary tract infection. And so I finally got her home the day after Thanksgiving. It was on a Friday, and when by Sunday she was back in the hospital again with this third stage urinary tract infection, which she had to contract there at the nursing home. And when I got her home on that Friday, she also had a mess in her. In her diaper, you know, which was the beginning of the C. diff stuff. So it was back to the hospital to take care of the urinary tract infection. And then back home again with antibiotics to get rid of that urinary tract infection. And then about 7 days later, why the C. diff took over and I was back in the hospital again, and
you think it was the substandard care at the rehab center that's the main problem here?
Well, yeah, and an article that my sister-in-law or my wife's sister sent me from, it came out of the newspaper in Los Angeles Times.
Mm-hmm.
That article could have actually been written about my wife here in Idaho. But it went on to say our nursing homes are a big infection. You know,
yeah.
They're rampant with infections. And so she's back in the hospital again for, and now at the hospital they have to suit up in plastic outfits in order to take care of her, and nobody can go in the room. And so what do they do at the hospital? They send her over to another nursing home with that disease. They know she's got it. And when I got on the first nursing homes, but about why in the hell did she catch that over there? Well, St. Luke's, I mean, the hospital sent her over here with somebody over here with that, and several people caught it. And so now, she was still under Medicare all this time, you know, and you only allowed 100 days for old people, you know, that's part of the rules. So that now that she's over there at the other nursing home, which isn't taking care of her either. I just had her to the doctor yesterday, and she's got another urinary tract infection. And they don't want her there. They got her over the bowel problem.
Yeah.
And I've already had to pay $8,500.
Wow.
For the for January, and now I got another bill for $18,000 that I got to pay coming up. And
are you getting legal advice, John?
Well, I was hoping that I could let somebody in this valley know what the hell's going on.
Okay.
And I was hoping that maybe that I could get a hold of somebody in the Statesman or some news organization to write a story about it. Because the ramifications here are that Medicare has paid a lot of money for the hospitals and the nursing homes to get her sicker. And now that money's run out, I'm a little bit, I don't know how, where in the hell I'm going to get it from.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a bunch of young people working in these places, and when I was that young, I didn't know nothing either, you know. And the other day when I wanted to take her to see our family doctor, they said I couldn't do that because she was under the care of a doctor at the nursing home, mm-hmm. and you can't do that. And I said, just watch me. And then I called the supplemental insurance that we have, and I said, well, you're allowed a second opinion no matter what the Obamacare thing says.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and when I got her to her doctor was yesterday, well, then they found out that she's also got some kind of an infection in her eye that I first seen, it wasn't very bad, but it was our first nursing home right after she got out of the local hospital.
Yeah.
I seen her eye had it was a little red, but that has been evolving to where there's been two different types of antibiotic drops that will not touch that infection.
Well, John, I think the first thing that you should probably do is figure out that there have got to be some legal services that you can check into, provided, I'm sure, by the government.
Yeah, we certainly can't give medical or legal advice on the air.
Yeah, that's true. We can't necessarily talk about that, but it does sound like there were some decisions made that were poor decisions. And not only is it costing it's costing Medicare money, but it's costing you quite a bit of money, too. So, John, we wish you the best of luck with that. It's 9:46. We'll be back.
Looks like mostly sunny skies are ahead of us this weekend. Details on your weather and more coming up on 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Now you can text Paul, Jay, and Chris. Text your message to 208-336-3700. Standard text rates apply. Sponsored by Diamond Heating and Cooling.
All right, we are back. Let's go to the phones. And John.
How are we today?
Good.
Well, not bad either, considering we're raining. Need a little snow, but that would be nice.
Yep, would be.
Feel bad for that gentleman you just had on.
Man, you get trapped up and, man, I can't give him any advice. What would you tell him to do?
Well, I would say pretty much the same thing. I mean, he needs to contact somebody, but
yep.
It's part of the problem there in that, in the greater sense, is he's paying a professional entity for something that they didn't complete or do.
Yep.
It's one of the few businesses where if you're not satisfied, you still have to pay them full price anyway.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah, it would be the same as if somebody built you a house and then it fell down and you had to pay them again to build you another house.
Right. Part of that goes back to, you know, needing limits on things as far as, you know, juries awarding multi-million dollars to people or places.
Yeah.
But what I had originally called in about was the California Attorney General is going to sue businesses that cooperate with the federal government.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Well, considering somebody that should know the law, if you do not comply with the federal government's mandates, you can no longer do business with them.
Yeah, the state, in California at least, the state wants to do one thing. The federal government wants something else to happen.
Every business that is doing business with the federal government,
yeah,
selling them books, tires, airplanes, whatever, has to comply. And if they don't, they can't sell their goods to the government.
Yeah.
So he's telling every business there that he doesn't care if they go broke.
There's so many bizarre things going on right now.
And well,
not the least of which is that.
Correct.
But yeah, he's telling the world that the priority of the state of California is the immigration rules and not anything else.
But it's backwards.
Yeah.
We made this Dreamers Act an act, and it's not a law.
True.
And so now you have people who are stuck in limbo, and they're blaming it on one side when really it's the other side's fault. There's just no vision.
Yeah.
And it just weighs in the face of everybody who's, you know, defended the country or took their turn in line to become a legal citizen.
Right.
We tell kids they can't even cut in line in the lunch line.
So
but
true.
Yet it's okay to, you know, skip ahead of everybody and not do things the right way. It sends a pretty bad message that, you know, if you play fair, you're last.
Well, yeah, a bad message, probably one that a lot of people have learned over time, but still a bad message.
Right, and yet you have people who have been elected to defend those things are placating their responsibilities. You had somebody on earlier that tiptoed around every issue that you asked her about, and yet, you know, we didn't get any answers. They come on and talk about what's going to happen in Idaho, but yet there's no direction. How do you stop the wages from being diminished? You can't force them up. You either have to have less things, products, or people for those jobs, or you have to create an environment where businesses can grow.
Yeah.
The government isn't really in the aspect of doing either one of those very well. And we can't just keep allowing imported people to drive the cost of housing to 6 to 10 times within a generation.
Yes, thank you, John. Good stuff. We are out of time. KBOI News Time, 9:55. See you Monday.